Today's episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 5 weekly podcasts: Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, Warhammer 40,000, The Valentine Heresy, and Curse Code and Crown, as well as 3 event podcasts with miniseries releases scheduled at random intervals: Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dumb Dumbs and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pun. Get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dumb Dumbs and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. One more time for the mortals in the back. redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back, initiates, to the Mythos Mysteries, a live-play Pulp Cthulhu podcast where improvisers and comedians venture into dangers beyond their wildest imaginings. I am H.P. Helmfirth, your host on this journey into darkness. The Mystery Punchers escaped the abattoir that was the mayor's bedroom and the scene of the crime. Adrian was heartily injured defending the others. Richter determined that the mayor did not summon his own attacker. And Red led the team away and towards the spooky gifts left by their murderous benefactor. So venture forth with us, dear friends, into the mythos.
Richter, you are left by the mystery machine, military wagon mobile, a little distance away from your home. It seemed prudent not to just dump you on the doorstep and just hope for the best. Red let you off, just kind of like a little ways down the street so you can kind of approach as you'll see fit. Red, can you roll me a spot hidden, please?
Yes.
So I feel like if you saw obvious signs of danger, you would not leave an old man to his fate.
Ooh. 00 is 0, right?
Yes.
Okay, then I rolled a 3. That is an extreme success.
Shit. Yeah, you, I think, don't let him out for like a good few minutes. You're also aware, though, that like Addie needs proper medical care. But you don't see any movement. His house looks completely dead and empty. Unfortunately, because of the size and quirk of his house, it would be kind of hard to tell. You don't see anything. And even after you let him out, I think you like do a lap around the block and you're not seeing anything at all. So it would seem that the collective idea you guys had last session that whatever this thing is, isn't present at the time is likely holding true.
Cool. Great. I think I probably like let him out with a warning of, you know, do not hesitate to use that shotgun.
Okay.
I will keep that in mind. Thank you, Red. Addy, take care of yourself. Red, take care of yourself. I will see you soon. Yeah?
Thank you for the bandages, Dr. Grandpa.
Oh, anytime, Addy.
And with that, the truck rolls on down. Richter, you begin to approach your house. How do you think you would approach?
I would go up to the front of the house, and I imagine the first floor having like big bay windows.
Yep.
And I want to look in the windows of my own home, see if I notice anything.
Sure. Given that we've described particularly like a year or so ago, 10 years ago, I don't know what the fuck time we started this podcast, but the meticulous nature of the mess in your house, I think you have a pretty good sense, even though it is a disaster all the time, you understand the disaster. Like you're one of those like, I mean, you literally run a curiosity shop, but like a lot of hoarders where they're just like, oh, I need a socket wrench. Well, I know there's one under these like 6 piles of newspapers and like, I don't know, a box of mini disc players. I'll just hop over there. So go ahead and roll me a spot hidden, please.
Uh-oh. Spot hidden. Not high enough. That's a fail.
Okay. It's dark inside and it's dark outside. So it's pretty difficult to see if anything is out of place. If you could see, you would know. But unfortunately, you can't quite make it out.
Okay. With the shotgun in hand, I'll go around to the back of my house and come in the back door.
Sure. So you enter through the back door into kind of your, I assume, kitchen. I think we talked about like the kitchen area.
Yeah.
The house has that familiar smell that's always so comforting, having been away from home for a while and around kind of the stench of blood and gore. Just that sort of comforting smell. What do you think Richter's house smells like, given kind of what you've collected?
That, I don't know if mildew is the right word, but that smell that like old paper can sort of accumulate. I think it's that. I think there's a lot of texts kept here. Newspapers that have been like, you know, delivered like day after day after day, just sitting inside like the mail slot of the front door kind of thing. I think it just smells old and musty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking too. So it's a familiar smell. It's a comforting smell to some extent. And the air feels very still, somewhat undisturbed.
And the kitchen appears to be in the state that I left it in.
It does.
I'm going to reach into my pocket and grab Benny's hand. I'm going to hold it like I'm shaking his hand. I'm going to grasp his hand that way. And I'll hold it out in front of me and I'll close my eyes and I'll just say, Benny, if you can hear me, guide me. Lead me, Benny, if you would be so kind.
And you feel just like a bit of like a squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
And then the index finger kind of points forward.
Do I feel like a pull or anything?
Yeah. Sorry, I guess because you're shaking. I was imagining you're holding. Yeah. So you feel kind of a tug, but it doesn't feel definitive. But okay. It does feel kind of like that's the direction to go.
I'll follow it anyway.
So following the gentle tug, you begin to wander into the quiet stillness of your home. Meanwhile, Red and Adrian, you're driving to the Diesel Estate, which again is on the outskirts of town, unfortunately, because it's old money on the opposite edge of town from the new money houses that have been built. And for the first time, kind of since your little showdown in Richter's shop, you actually have kind of a moment, just the two of you. Weirdly, in a lot of ways, it feels like the old days, except that neither of you would get this banged up in the old days. This is relatively new. But it's also, I think, for the two of you, and based on kind of the conversations you've been having, the first time where you've been able to kind of work together the way you used to. So there's a familiarity in that. And I think, as is the way with like people we've known for a really long time, you had like a pretty massive falling out and then you just kind of went back to work. And there's something that comes with that. What do you think you guys discuss as you drive to the Diesel Estate?
We're a long way from Boston, aren't we, Adrian?
Yeah.
She smiles a little bit at that. And I feel like that's exactly what she expected him to say. When this is all over, honey, we're going back. You know that, right?
To Boston? Why?
Yes. Would you rather stay here?
I don't know. We've got a big house and Wackadoo Willie has my donkeys. We could live here in a nice house and all the spooky things would be gone. Then we wouldn't have to get shot anymore.
Did you have fun in Boston, Adrian? Was that an enjoyable life for you?
No, but I like being with you.
She takes a second to...
Do you like being with me?
Of course I do, honey.
Have fun in Boston?
Adrian, I got to smuggle liquor and run my own gang. Yes, I did. I realize that it's not the kindest life, and it's not the easiest life.
Yeah.
But I have a feeling that you and I would get very bored here very quickly.
Maybe. I don't know. The sprinkles is all over the place. There's the ice cream man visits. Grandpa Richard has a store, and he's a doctor now, so maybe you could be mayor and make everyone friends. Because the mayor is dead.
He is. And I just hope that whatever we find at your house isn't quite so scattered.
Wait, there's something at my house?
And with that, you pull up to the Diesel Estate. Richter, Benny's hand is kind of tugging you along, and almost you notice he seems to be dragging you to the places that he's most familiar with. So you go to the sitting room where you'd often sit and talk about, headlines and what Benny was investigating. You go to the kitchen where you shared a number of meals. Can you roll me an int, please?
That's a success at least. That's a hard success.
Very good. You get the sense that this is there's a hesitation and then kind of a certainty to a lot of these gestures that reminds you a lot of when someone actually doesn't really know where they are, but is determined, like, oh no, I'm pretty sure it's, you know, that thing where it's like you're looking at a bunch of different streets and you're like, it's this one. It's got to be this one. And then they just like pull your hand and go that way and it's not that way. You're getting the sense that Benny actually doesn't necessarily have anything specific for you, but kind of feels like like the hand seems like it's filled that role for you for so long that it has to have some insight. So it's trying to be helpful, but as you're getting tugged around these familiar spaces, you're not really seeing anything that out of the ordinary, and you start to get the sense that maybe the hand is in its own bashful way just trying to help out.
I'll sling the shotgun over my hand so that I've over my shoulder, so I've got a free hand to just kind of like cup Benny's hand and just like reassuringly hold his hand and say, "All right, Benny, that is enough. Rest now, my friend. I will call on you again when I need you. Thank you." And I'll put his hand in my pocket.
As you do so, the hand gives you like a half thumbs up, like a sheepish, like, I tried. And then the thumb kind of goes down sadly, and you put the hand back in your pocket.
And I will continue the search throughout my house on my own.
Okay.
I'll go upstairs, my bedroom.
All right. So you find, you know, your robe where you discarded it some time ago now. It's been a while since you've been home. Yeah. You find the slippers that we described so lovingly in episode one, where you would normally leave them. Your room seems undisturbed. In a lot of ways, I think the thing that strikes you perhaps the most about being home now is how quaint a lot of the research you've been doing feels after all of the occult things you've encountered and all the knowledge you've unlocked. You're looking at, for a long time, you were on the outside looking in on the occult. And now that you're on the inside, it's kind of, I think, somewhat humbling to look at all the research you've been doing and the ways you've been approaching it. And, you know, it's like you found the Rosetta Stone. So you're trying to decipher a bunch of languages, but now you've like really unlocked a bunch of stuff. So there's, I think, a sense of loss to some extent. But also, given I don't think you mourn the past very often, you kind of drive forward. So it's fleeting if it's there at all. But I would offer that up as a possibility. So yes, your room is undisturbed.
I think seeing my robe and slippers, I'll go into my bathroom next, mm-hmm. with the intention of taking my gore-soaked clothes off and just throwing them like in the tub or something, and then sure. putting on my clean, comfortable clothes.
Great. Yeah. So you do that. Again, the house is still and quiet. What does the new outfit you put on look like?
It's my robe. It's my, silk robe and my comfy slippers.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So you feel the familiar warmth of the robe and the slippers. And it's just nice to be out of the viscera soaked garbage.
Yep.
A cursory look around the rest of the upper floor. Nothing seems to be amiss. And I think you're a pretty instinctual fella. You're getting the distinct sense that there's nothing here. Of course, there's still the basement.
Of course there is the basement. I'll grab a flashlight and I'll go to that, you know, you come down the stairs from upstairs down to the ground floor, and if you like turn around, it's like that doorway in the stairs that leads down
exactly
to more
what
stairs.
I was imagining too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll go to the door and open it, and I'll light my flashlight.
You're hit with a smell of sort of cold, musty air, as basements are like to do. And with the steps creaking beneath your slippered feet, you begin to descend into the darkness.
Thanks for supporting the Fable and Folly Network. Here's another show we know you'll love.
Greetings, I'm Bernard.
And I'm Magenta. You might know us from such hit podcasts as Madame Magenta, Sonus Mystica,
Horror Anthology Magenta Presents,
or Season 3 of Mockery Manor.
We're everywhere.
And we're spreading faster than an STD in an old folks home, because now we have a brand new podcast. Wham!
Wham! It's a fun acronym that stands for We Have a Movie.
Oh, it's not just an acronym, Bernard.
It's not?
It's a chat podcast where we invent smash hit Hollywood movies based on popular toys.
If you like the Barbie movie and you want to see similar treatments of your favorite childhood toys, I'll wager you'll like Wham! With episodes on Polly Pocket, Rubik's Cube, Game Boy, Strawberry Shortcake,
Furby, Connect Four, and lots of other nostalgia bait. But it's not just for adults who still like toys. It's a podcast for anyone who loves Hollywood tropes and comedy.
And quantum mechanics.
And BDSM.
Wham! Has something for everyone, but is still specifically about movies.
That's Wham! W-H-A-M. You know, like when Batman punches someone.
Yes.
Adam West. That Batman.
Exactly.
Not the Christopher Nolan one.
No.
Download it anywhere you listen to podcasts. That's what the world needs, another movie podcast.
Was that clear? Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned quantum mechanics.
Dum Dums and Dice would like to invite you to check out Dumb Scum and Villainy, a podcast where comedians and improvisers explore the underworld of the Star Wars Edge of the Empire role-playing game. This series features our game master, Tom McGee, Ryan LaPlante as Abraxas Brash Core, Tyler Hewitt as Vic Denbar, Guy Bradford as N-Gage 311, and Adam McNamara as the forgetful psychopath, Waka Waka Fonzie. So join this crew of bumbling criminals. See if they turn to the dark side of the Force or stay in the shadowy parts of the light and enjoy an adventure in a galaxy far, far away. Episodes are available now. Now get out of my shop.
Red and Adrian, you've pulled up outside of the Diesel estate. The house stands under the beautiful tree canopy that we described oh so many moons ago. Adrian, one thing I want to ask you before we venture into the mansion itself, how you they've given you some confusing ideas about Sally. Where are you at with Sally?
I still don't think he gets it. I think Adrian believes that there is a monster and Sally is involved. So either the monster has Sally or Sally made friends with the monster, which feels like probably the most logical one to him, but that she's mad because we didn't save her. So I think he feels like bad about it, but I don't think he can really understand the idea of her having either become something terrible. Like that's an abstraction too far for him.
Would he discuss this with Red? Would he ask for clarification, or is this one of the things that lives in his mind vault?
No, I think he'd be comfortable asking about that stuff if he was putting it together from like the hotel, from like the mayor's house. And I think over time, that would probably be a, like they talked in the car, and then he had time to sit, and they'd just be like, "So about Sally." She's mad at us, so she made friends with this monster thing. So how do we make her not mad at us anymore?
Well, what we have to do, Adrian, is we have to kill the monster thing that she's friends with. And then she'll come back to us.
Or but we killed the pastor, and his spooky thing is living in the sewer.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot going on that shouldn't be going on, and that's what we're here for. We're here to get another clue as to how to destroy the monster that Sally is friends with.
But what is the clue?
Well, I don't know, Adrian. That's what we're here to find out.
Are a house and a home the same thing?
No, they can be, but they're not always.
Okay, but this is my house.
Yes.
But the wall said the clue would be at home.
Right, so this was your home. So in this case, a house and a home are the same thing.
But you said we're going back to Boston, so we don't live here, so this isn't a home. Where's our home?
I don't think we have one right now, Adrian. But we'll find it.
So our home is each other?
I like that.
Okay.
But I don't know if the monster speaks in those kind of intangible images.
Oh, no. We'll stab the monster. And he just takes out his, like, spooky knife that he got for the cult. He's like, you do this, and then it's on fire, and it dies.
Exactly.
And then we'll give Sally a cake.
Exactly.
Everybody likes cake.
Happy birthday to us.
Huh. And with that, you you exit the truck and make your way up to the Diesel estate. The grounds of which are less well kept now that there's no longer a spooky ghost janitor. Friendly ghost janitor. Richter, you make your way into the basement. We've actually never described your basement. What the fuck is Richter's basement like?
It's like a second curiosity shop. It's like okay. It's like the satellite location for his for his shop. So it's just full of weird shit, man. There's like a sarcophagus in there. There's masks from different cultures. A number of books and scrolls, books like stacked like up like to the ceiling, like
Ghostbusters,
kind of thing.
Library yeah. style.
Yeah.
Ryan and Claire, what is one interesting object that exists in Richter's satellite location basement?
Ooh, I'd like to think that there's like a petrified clawed animal hand. Okay. Of an animal that no one could guess what it is.
All right. I like that. You can find it either in Richter's basement or at like a Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Yeah,
in like
exactly.
Niagara Falls. Yeah, all right. I love it.
There is a suit of samurai armor in the style of an oni, like the demon. Only it has all been made as one interlocking piece. So it is impossible for a person to get into or get out of it. It is just hanging on a frame and no one knows why that is true.
Cool.
That's fucking awesome.
That is awesome.
Very cool. You got a cool basement, pal. Damn. You make your way into said cool basement.
I like to think this is where like I keep the good shit, so to speak. Like the shop is for stuff that I'm willing to let go for a price. But like this is like the private collection.
I'm starting to realize more and more that Richter is kind of like the embodiment of Honest Ed, the weird like variety shop owner here in Toronto, who similarly had like, it was like everything was like, oh, you can get toothpaste for 99 cents. And then there'd just be a corner where it was like giant golden, like guard the center of a palace statues for like $20,000. And they're like, oh, and also this, but also cheap VHSs.
Yeah.
I also like to imagine that this is where Richter. I also like to imagine that this is where Richter brings dates on like the second date to be like, this is going to impress them.
I mean, look, Jessica Fletcher tried. She shot her she shot, did. And if anyone would have appreciated this as a date, it would be her. I don't think Richter's been on a date. I don't know, no. Tyler, if that's true, but.
If he has been on dates, nobody makes it to the basement.
I was gonna say,
like the dates are done and off before he can be like, would you like to come into my basement and take a look at my exotic wares?
Richter would take himself on a date for a special night. Like Richter has to do something where he feels like he earned a trip to the basement. like it's his own self-courting of like intellect.
Well, so then this is actually a pretty significant moment then, because anywhere else in the house being kind of touched by anything like fucking fine, but this is sacred ground for you then. Can you roll me a spot hidden, please?
Oof. Fail.
Looking around with sort of a mounting sense of doom and of import, you find nothing. You keep expecting to, you know, find, I don't know, the Annabelle doll or some shit, just like sitting there being like, I'm clearly evil. But nothing is out of place in your basement. In fact, nothing seems to be out of place anywhere in your house. Which is, I think, to some extent disappointing, but also somewhat vexing. What would Richter make of that?
It's a relief that nothing was done down here.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is the nagging sensation of, okay, well, what have I missed? And my home feeling a little desecrated, like such a powerful message written on that wall of like, there's more gifts at your friends' homes. And to come home and not have it just be like in your face, to now be like, where is it? When am I going to find it? What is it going to be? I think there's just a sense of unease about the rest of his home. Relief that he didn't find anything untowards in the basement, and now just a simmering level of anxiety about the rest of his house.
So you're standing in this heavy silence, feeling that kind of anxiety mount, when suddenly the air is pierced by the harsh metallic ringing of your phone upstairs. Meanwhile, Adrian and Red, you are approaching the Diesel estate. What's your approach vector? How are you playing this? We can say safely that you're like out of the truck. You can let me know where you parked it. You can let me know how you're kind of approaching.
I mean, I think I would suggest that Adrian go in the front door and I go in the back door.
Okay.
Addy would never think to have a subtle plan. It's his house, so he would just go up and open the door. Okay, he would also wait if Red was like, wait to a count of 20.
Yeah. Yeah.
To fully qualify, he is only capable of counting to 3. So he would just count to 3 and then go, but Red probably knows that.
I do. You know,
she's got to run.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
I would probably say, now count to 20 5 times.
So you go 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, and she's
1, 2, 3, and then he'd go. But she gets 9 out of it, which is good.
Right.
Okay, amazing. Would you guys you're going for like the boot the door or just like open and like,
oh, he would
cramering
just
in, or are you like
it's his house, but I think he still thinks of it as his parents' house. So I think he would open it politely, but probably yell like, "Mommy, Dad, I'm home."
Okay. Yeah.
Red's not in a physical mood to boot anything open, so.
Gotcha. So you open the doors and step in, and sorry, Red's going in the front, Adrian's going in the back, or vice versa?
Other way around.
Perfect. Adrian, you feel something crunch under your foot as you open the door, and the large mirror that used to hang near the door is shattered.
Oh. Did I do this?
he cannot remember whether or not it was from his mirror breaking phase or if he was cool with it.
It was not, but he can't remember. So,
yeah.
Red, would you be doing like spot hidden? Would you be doing listen? What do you think your entry would be?
Yeah, I think it would be like very quietly turning the doorknob, gun in one hand, opening the door, looking around both sides of the inside. Yeah, spot hidden for sure.
Sure, great.
That is, ooh, that's a hard success.
Okay, so as you ease the door open and kind of just peek inside, you can similarly see anywhere that any reflective surface that you can kind of observe that isn't glass that would be specifically reflective is also shattered. So we'll say there's another mirror kind of near the back, it is also broken. But other than that, the building feels still. Looking around, you don't see signs of a struggle. The mirrors just seem to be broken.
I'm going to pick up the largest shard of mirror that I can find.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think she understands. Like, I know why I'm doing it. I don't even know if Red understands the occulty nature of what she's doing. But I think she's just like, it doesn't like mirrors. Grab the biggest chunk of mirror I can find in case this bastard shows its face.
Cool. Can you roll me another spot hidden? I'm sorry. We're leaning on that one a lot today. It just is important for reasons.
I've rolled 2 25s. That's another hard success.
As you pick it up, you kind of do the Theseus shield thing for, you know, if you're going to break into Medusa's house and arbitrarily kill her like Theseus did. As you kind of hold it up, something feels off about it. Like, it's just kind of one of those things where, you know, occasionally you'll notice a detail that kind of like sets you back. So you turn the mirror shard back towards you, and you have no reflection.
Good.
You guys are really getting somewhere fast with your house. My house is just normal, and it's freaking me out. It's worse than finding something.
So, okay. having stared into the empty shard and noticing now with the other shards that they too are reflecting nothing, do you hold it back up in front of you?
Yes. I think she's going to be like, that's fucking weird and probably means something terrible, but I've made this choice and I'm going to stick to it.
Amazing.
Because chances are, if it's something that has caused me to not appear in mirrors, it's probably not going to be something that I can shoot with a gun.
Legit. So I feel like this is kind of like, it would be a flashlight normally. In this case, it's like your FBI badge. So like, yeah. You've got the gun up with like mirror shard. And with that, you meet up with Adrian. Red, would it be safe to say, given this idea you've had, that you would take lead, because the odds of you being able to out spoopy a spoopy thing is higher than Adrian just getting like stomped by a ghost?
Yes.
Okay.
Though so, Addie does have his magic knife.
This is also true. So I think we'll say it's kind of like, Red, you're kind of like leading the way with the shard up and the gun. Adrian, you're bringing up the rear with like the narwhal out, and I guess the knife. Like you,
he'd probably focus on the knife if she's got the gun and she looks spooked. And yeah, he'd like Secret Service it. It's that like one hand on the shoulder, ready to like, you know, shove her aside if he's got a stab.
Cool. But I also think like seeing her holding up this glass shard would probably signal to you like, oh, Red's got a plan. So like,
yeah,
it's the plan. And if the plan goes bad, stabby, stabby, stab.
Exactly. She seems purposeful.
Amazing. So kind of in that Secret Service mode, you start making your way up the stairs. Meanwhile, Richter, the classic this era, like bell ringing that we now sometimes put on digital smartphones to make us feel like we still have the things we grew up with, is just piercing the air around you. What do you do?
I think I probably curse as just like, scheisse, just like, oh, it's just the phone. Oh, geez. Okay. And I'll make my way up the stairs to answer the phone.
Okay. So you arrive to your kitchen. The phone has stopped ringing as you approach it on your wall.
I'll wait. You know, someone's trying to get a hold of me. They might call again. I'll wait.
After a few moments, the phone begins to ring again.
I'm going to answer.
You hear an inhuman screech and the sound of glass shattering and what sounds like almost bone breaking. Through the receiver, you just hear, "Please, Herr Richter, you must help."
Do I recognize
I'm at
voice?
The motel. It is here. And then you hear the sound of a laser gun.
Huh.
And a scream.
This episode of the Mythos Mysteries features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at The Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Claire Blackwood at Claire Blackwood on Twitter, and Keeper Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode's sound was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra. And the Mythos Mysteries show logo was created by Decapitated Marker at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. That's MRKR. Our theme songs are Dark Alleys and Sentinel by Kai Engel. And our ads use the tracks No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, JAHZZAR. And all of their music is available at freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are dumdumdice. And on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. We have merchandise available at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice. And most importantly, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's DUMBDUMBDICE. All hail the mythos.
Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, Long Long, the Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grams, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lord of Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Chet Awesome Laser, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Taryn Hefner, Cade Peters, Richard Cranium, Christian Mendez, Anna Zed, Fire on Friendly, Logan, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
Hi, we're the narrators of Midst.
What's Midst? It's very simple. It's a weird, surrealist, fourth wall breaking, reality bending, science fantasy space western about a small doomed planet floating in a cosmic ocean of spooky darkness.
Upon whose alien landscape, an ensemble cast of characters, including a crotchety outlaw, a freakishly virtuous cultist, and a diabolical businessman, make awful decisions and fight like hell to survive when the moon falls out of the sky and a large number of terrible things happen in rapid succession.
It's exciting, it's funny, it's scary. It's got neat sound, weird music, amazing visuals, and every episode comes with bonus content you can read and examine.
Midst is performed solely by yours truly, as the three of us narrate all the action, play all of the characters, and bend a lot of the rules about how telling stories is normally supposed to work.
Midst is pretty fun, very strange, and it feels like VR for your brain.
We believe you'll enjoy it, or maybe you won't, but there's really only one way to find out. You're going to have to listen to Midst.